Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson. On this episode of ID the Future, we hear from Dr. Michael Egnor, pediatric neurosurgeon and professor of neurological surgery at State University of New York, Stony Brook. In this talk, which is part of bonus material that goes with the series of short videos at scienceuprising.com, Dr. Egnor reviews common materialist philosophical views of the mind, then begins exploring whether these views have any scientific support. The answer from both brain surgery and imaging studies turns out to be emphatic, says Dr. Egnor. There is no support for materialism from a scientific perspective. Here he shares four results from research in neuroscience that discredit materialist views of the mind.
Materialism is an ancient philosophy. It dates back to the ancient Greeks. And the viewpoint of Democritus, who was a Greek philosopher, is that the only thing that exists is atoms in the void, and that everything, including the human mind, is reducible to atoms in the void. And in the 20th century, the materialist ideas have been extended a bit. The behaviorists in the early 20th century believed that the mind was at best irrelevant and possibly didn't even really exist at all. The only thing that actually mattered was the behavior of a human being or the behavior of an organism. That philosophical viewpoint turned out to be untenable. So the viewpoint that the mind was identical to the brain became widely accepted among materialists in the 1960s and 70s. It was called identity theory. And that viewpoint has come to be untenable. Pretty obviously, the mind is not the same thing as the brain. And other theories, such as functionalism, which views the mind-brain relationship somewhat akin to the relationship between the software and the hardware of a computer, has become quite popular, but the mind is not computation. In fact, the mind is the opposite of computation. Although the brain itself could be described as a computer, the mind is no form of computation. And a theory that is currently very popular among materialists is called eliminative materialism. And eliminative materialism is the viewpoint that there is no such thing as the mind. It's not that the mind is explainable by matter, it's just that the mind doesn't exist at all. And the only thing that exists is matter, and that we are deluded into thinking we have minds. That's a rather radical, strange way to look at things, but it actually is rather popular nowadays amongst materialists. None of these philosophical materialist viewpoints have any particular support in science. The scientific evidence strongly suggests that these viewpoints are wrong. There are a variety of classic studies in neuroscience that support the viewpoint that some aspects of the mind are not material and that refute materialism. The first set of experiments are experiments that show cerebral localization with certain kinds of neurological functions, but not with others. It's been known since the 19th century that for motor and sensory function, there are very specific locations in the brain that seem to mediate those functions. What if I move my hand? That is controlled by a specific part of my opposite cerebral hemisphere, and the area is quite discrete. Vision is controlled by a very discrete area in the occipital lobes. However, higher intellectual functions, abstract thought, such as mathematics, such as contemplating ethics, things involved in personality, are not localized like that. That is, that there is no calculus center of my brain. There's no addition center of my brain. The brain seems to be necessary, ordinarily, for doing calculus and doing addition and thinking about concepts like justice and mercy and so on. But it's not localizable in any way near the same way that movement and sensation is localizable. The belief that higher abstract thought was going to be localizable was held by materialists in the 19th century, and they developed the theory of phrenology from that. As the idea that all of these individual higher intellectual functions had a spot in the brain that controlled them. And phrenology, of course, has been discredited. It's been shown to be wrong. And it was wrong because only certain things seem to be mediated by the brain. Other aspects of the mind don't have a spot in the brain that seems to give rise to them. The implication there is that they're not really material. that they're an immaterial power of being able to reason and use logic. And frankly, that's a very old dualist idea. It was an idea proposed by Aristotle, an idea as part of Thomistic philosophy. So for thousands of years, dualists have predicted that, and modern neuroscience confirms that. Back in the 1960s, Roger Sperry, who is a prominent neuroscientist, did a series of studies on patients who had had split brain operations. And these are patients who had severe epilepsy, in which an epileptic focus would begin in one hemisphere of the brain and travel through the corpus callosum, which is a bundle of fibers connecting the two hemispheres, and cause a generalized seizure. It was recognized by surgeons in the mid-20th century that if you cut the fiber bundle that connected the two hemispheres of the brain, that you could prevent the seizures from becoming generalized and you could greatly improve the quality of the patient's life. So a number of patients had this operation called corpus callosotomy. It's an operation that I've performed and that many neurosurgeons have performed. Surprisingly, after the operation, the patients, their seizures would get better, of course, but they really weren't much different. That is that their brains were essentially cut in half, but they still seemed to be a unitary person. They still seemed to be fairly normal. Sperry was a neuroscientist who studied these people in detail, and he did find that there were some subtle abnormalities as a result of cutting the brain in half. But the abnormalities were very subtle. They were so subtle that the experiments he did won him the Nobel Prize. But they weren't obvious. They weren't obvious changes. And what that implies is that the human mind is not purely generated by the matter of the brain. Otherwise, cutting the brain in half would have profound effects on the human mind. It might make two people. Certainly, it would create a rather profound difference in a person's state of consciousness. And it doesn't. You can cut the brain in half, and the person can't tell the difference except that he has fewer seizures. There are some subtle differences, but the differences can only be detected with literally Nobel Prize-winning research that shows little differences in perception. There are the experiments of Wilder Penfield, who was the pioneer in epilepsy neurosurgery from the 1930s to the 1960s. Dr. Penfield, who worked in Montreal in Canada, was the first neurosurgeon to systematically operate on the human brain when people were awake. The brain doesn't feel pain. The scalp can feel pain and the skull can, but he would give local anesthesia so the patients didn't have pain. And he would work on the brain while they were awake in an effort to identify the focus of their seizures and to remove the focus from the brain so their seizures would stop. And he operated on upwards of 1,000 patients like this and very carefully recorded his results. He was a meticulous scientist as well as a neurosurgeon. And he began his career as a materialist. He believed that all of the mind originated from activity of the brain. But by the end of his career, he was a passionate dualist and was a harsh critic of materialism. And he was a dualist for several reasons. First is that he repeatedly observed that there were aspects of the patient's mind that no matter what he did to the brain, he couldn't affect. You know, he could elicit memories by stimulating a part of the brain. He could make a muscle move or make a patient have a sensation. But he couldn't change their consciousness. He couldn't change their intellect. He couldn't change their sense of self. There was a fundamental core, the person's soul, that no matter what he did to the brain, remained the same. So he said there was something he couldn't reach using material things. The other observation that he had, which I think is absolutely fascinating, is that he asked the question, why are there no intellectual seizures? And when people have epilepsy, the epilepsy can follow various patterns. Commonly, a person will have jerking of a muscle. Sometimes so many muscles jerk that they actually go unconscious. Sometimes they have a tingling on their skin, or sometimes they'll have a funny smell, or sometimes they can even have a little behavioral tic. But they never start doing calculus. They never contemplate justice or mercy. They never think about Shakespeare. So Penfield says, why aren't there intellectual seizures? If the mind comes from the brain entirely, the mind is material in some sense, well, then you ought to have seizures that make you do addition when you can't stop. You ought to have seizures that make you think about politics and you can't stop. But you don't. He says, there are no intellectual seizures. And he says, what that implies is that the intellect is not the brain. because otherwise you would have intellectual seizures. So Penfield was a very profound thinker on this matter. He was the pioneer in the study of the brain. And he conclusively showed, in my view, that there is an immaterial aspect to the mind, particularly the intellect, particularly the ability to reason, to use logic. And he started out as a materialist, and he finished his career as a passionate dualist. In 2006, a neuroscientist named Owen published a landmark study in the journal Science looking at brain function in people who were in persistent vegetative state. Persistent vegetative state is a condition where a person has such severe brain damage that they show no sign of consciousness at all. It's basically a persistent deep coma, and it can go on for years. And many times, people who are diagnosed as being in persistent vegetative state, for example, from a car accident or from a lack of oxygen to the brain, something like that, many times their family and sometimes their caretakers will say, but I get the sense that the person is there, that they understand things, but there's no clinical evidence for it. You examine them, there's no sign of any reaction at all. And on scan, their brains are shrunken and obviously severely damaged. So Owen did a fascinating experiment. He used a technique called functional MRI imaging, which is an MRI machine that images changes in blood flow in the brain that seems to correlate with brain function. So if you're moving your arm, the part of your brain that involves moving your arm lights up on a functional MRI. If you're thinking about stuff, your frontal lobes light up, things like that. So what Owen did is that he took a woman who had been diagnosed for several years in persistent vegetative state from a car accident, who showed no sign at all of any awareness, deep coma, put her in the MRI machine and asked her questions through a little microphone and headset. He said, pretend that you're playing tennis, or imagine that you're walking across the room. He asked her to imagine all these things. And her brain kind of lit up in places. But you could say that, well, the brain lighting up doesn't mean she was understanding anything. It just meant maybe the sound coming into her ears was causing a reflex or something. So what he did was he took 15 normal people, and he did the same thing with them, stuck them in the machine, and asked the same questions. And then he asked neuroradiologists to look at the functional MRI images of this woman and the 15 normal people and see if you could tell a difference between the two. And they couldn't. Her pattern of reaction was identical to the normal people. That seemed to imply that she could understand what he was asking, even though medically she was diagnosed as having no mind at all. And he did something that was very clever, that absolutely fascinates me. And he said, maybe the lighting up of areas in her brain and the lighting up of the areas in normal people's brains was not because of understanding, but was just because of the reception of the sound, and that it didn't really mean she understood. So what he then did is he took the same words that he had asked her before, and he asked them again, but he mixed the sequence of the words so they didn't make any sense. Walking, understand, pretend, room, across. So he took away the semantics and just left some syntax, and her brain stopped reacting, as did the normal controls. Her brain only reacted when what he said to her made sense. It didn't react from just sound. So Owen's work was a landmark study, and it made people begin to question these folks who were in persistent vegetative state, are they really unaware? So his study has been repeated by a number of different investigators, and there probably, last I looked, there were 40 or 50 patients who had been studied by other investigators. And at least half of them showed the same thing that he found, that even when your brain is so massively destroyed that there's no clinical evidence for any mental activity at all, functional MRI can find that these patients are capable of thinking in quite clear ways. And there are some patients who can do mathematics. That is, that what some researchers have done is they will ask a person in persistent vegetative state to do simple math. What's 8 plus 6? And then give them different answers. And when you hit the right answer, the brain lights up. So very clearly, there are aspects of the mind that cannot be destroyed by severe brain damage. That's what Owen's work is showing us. It's showing us there are aspects of the mind that aren't connected tightly to the brain, that are immaterial.
That was Dr. Michael Egnor, pediatric neurosurgeon and professor of neurological surgery at Stony Brook State University. To see more of his commentary and the growing body of videos making the case against scientific materialism, check out the website scienceuprising.com. There you'll find a series of action-filled short videos that will get you rethinking what science really says about life and what it means to be human. Dr. Egnor's material here is part of the bonus material under the subject labeled Mind. Keep an eye on the main Science Uprising site for more short videos coming out over the course of 6 weeks. Again, that's scienceuprising.com. For ID the Future, I'm Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.